Blog Talk Radio.
Survived the relocation and the ones who died along the way. To those that carried on traditions and lived strong among their people. To those who left their communities by force or by choice and through generations no longer know who they are. To those who search and never find. To those who turn away the so-called non-acceptance. To those that bring us together. And those living outside, keeping touch, the voice for many. To those that make it back to live and fight the struggles of their people. To those that give up and those who do not care. To those who abuse themselves and others and those who revive again. To those who are mentally, physically, or spiritually incapable by accident or by birth. To those who seek strength in our spirituality and ways of life, and those who exploit it, even ourselves, our own. To those who fall for the lies and join the dividing lines that keep us fighting amongst each other. To the outsiders who step in, good or bad, and those of us that we don't know better. To the leaders and prisoners of war, politics, crime, race, and religion, innocent or guilty. To the young, the old, the living, and the dead. To our brothers and sisters and all living things across this earth woman and her beauty we've destroyed. And we've denied the honor that creation has given each individual, the truth.
Yes. Welcome, everyone, to Talking Feather Radio here on Blog Talk. And this is your co-host, Thunder Williams. With me tonight, or today, is...
Penny Gamble Williams here on the road.
Penny Gamble Williams on assignment on the road. And Penny, you know, I really miss seeing you in the studio today, but you know, we remain connected through this technology. The world
Definitely.
Is just the world is just a phone call away here on Blog Talk Radio.
That's right, and it's a good thing.
It's a good thing. And speaking of phone calls, we're waiting on a phone call from someone we hope to be a special guest this evening. And if things work out well, we'll hear from them. We're prepared to just have engage in a dynamic, thought thought-provoking dialogue on the topic titled The Desecration of Geronimo's Name. And if we're fortunate, we will have joining this dialogue special guest and friend Suzanne Shone Harjo, a Cheyenne and Hodogi Muscogee from Oklahoma, who's been noted here on Talking Feather Radio. So, Penny.
That's right.
Yeah. As we move forward with this topic, and before we do, we always begin our discussion or with pulling together our indigenous and giving thanks to our Creator and the Great Spirit.
Yes, definitely. And I'd like to see if you can adjust the sound, because I'm missing some of your words.
Aha, you are missing some of the words. Well, we are just having a wonderful time tonight here on Blog Talk Radio. So I'm going to adjust my sound as best I can, but I hope that it's coming through a little better. But
kind of breaking up every so often, but we'll work with it.
Okay. Yeah. Better.
All right. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. You see, technology, there's no fear of technology here on Talking Feather Radio. Just because we're indigenous people doesn't mean that we can't handle the technology.
That's for sure. Well, I want to just acknowledge the Great Spirit there. Kitanet, Numakami Witamog, Oki, Numakami Witamog, Ukamas, Nipashat, Numakami Witamog, Utachi Kriyasun, Nipawas, Numakami Witamog, Tabat Nuayim, Numakami Witamog, E Utnu Shikaki, Wampanayo, Dawanayo, Hatanayo, Nanumayo, Great Spirit. I offer this tobacco, Aki, Mother Earth, I offer this tobacco. Grandmother Moon, I offer this tobacco. Grandfather Sun, I offer this tobacco. I offer this tobacco to the four directions, to the east, to the south, to the west, to the north. For that, I say Kotabatashi.
Yes, aho. And Justin, we honor all our relations.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, Penny, there was, let's begin this dialogue about the desecration of Geronimo's name by focusing on a Senate committee, and that would be the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs. On May 5th of this year, 2011, a hearing titled Stolen Identities, the Impact of Racist Stereotypes on Indigenous People. And that was an oversight hearing focused on depictions of Native people in American society and the effect that these depictions have on communities and American public in general. And they explored how Indian mascots and common caricatures and prevalent misportrayals have far-reaching impacts on the identity and sense of self-worth of Native peoples, and how they negatively impact all Americans, and how it affects how all Americans perceive and relate to each other. And, you know, that was scheduled for and was held on May 8th, and Suzanne Shone Harjo, president of the Morningstar Institute, as well as the Honorable Tex Hall, the chairman of the Manban Hadatsa, Arakara Nation, and other people, Stephanie Freiberg, and the actor Chase Spencer, and others testified about those different things on the 5th of May. And, you know, as if by a giant stroke of synchronicity, just to let everyone know, just to let the world know, that this issue of the negative portrayals and depictions of American Indians and Native people, indigenous people of Turtle Island, is still alive and well. It is not something far, long ago and far away. Just to let us all know that this issue is still alive, there was a world stage event that took place on May 1. Some of you may have heard about that. And that was on May 1, President Barack Obama and others in the White House Situation Room heard words, quote, I quote, "We've ID'd Geronimo," close quote. And they soon got the word that Osama bin Laden had been killed. And I quote again, Geronimo, E-K-I-A, shorthand for enemy killed in action. So here we are, 2011, and still talking about depictions of Native peoples in American society, exploring a lot of forgotten Indian history in the Americas, and we have these words, and the whole world is asking, are Native people still the enemy of the American government? Have we still today become a ruthless mass murderer and the world's number one terrorist? I mean, we have to ask ourselves, why are we taking the name of a great leader, a great warrior, Goyathle, better known as Geronimo, a Chiricahua Apache leader who resisted the U.S. government policy to consolidate his Apache people on reservations by leading a series of raids against Mexican and American settlements. Why are we taking this man's name and equating it to the most wanted mass murderer and the number one terrorist on the globe? So
Penny, there's a great deal of insensitivity, and just I think sometimes a combination of a lack of understanding, education, and ignorance, and a feeling of superiority, and just not fully understanding or you know, having that passion for understanding this history, and that it does have an effect on people. It does have an effect on not just Native people, but all people. So,
well, you know, this is deep rooted. This is deep seated, and think that, well, you know, Dad, get over it, folks. I mean, you know, we came here. We took your land. We don't really want to talk openly about that. We don't really want to deal openly with any aspect. The fact that we haven't honored any of the treaties, et cetera, and so forth, the Trail of Tears and all the other horrendous things, it's deep-seated, and people don't like to face the fact that it still resides within this system, this institutionalized system of racism that is alive and well here in America. And you know, Penny, when we go back to the Wild West shows, and this really is, you know, it's like the Wild West reincarnated. The Wild West shows, the Hollywood films, and these indigenous-based mascots have shaped the perception of indigenous for over 100 years. And, you know, these early media forms generally presented us Native Americans either as noble yet submissive warriors or bloodthirsty savages. And emerging from all these shows and films were these Native American mascots. And, you know, many people may not appreciate the fact, but the research has shown that Native American mascots have negative effect on Native students' self-esteem and their sense of worth, and that exposure to Native American team mascots increases a person's negative stereotyping of other races. If you do it to one, you're really going to do it to all. And And, you know, it's interesting that at this hearing on the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs that was dealt with the topic stolen identities, the impact of racist stereotypes on indigenous people, when Stephanie Freiberg testified, she came up with an interesting research finding and conclusion. And that is, there's two polarities going on here. And one, at one end of the spectrum, you have indigenous people who see these mascots and these negative portrayals and a devastating impact on their identity, their sense of self-esteem, and self-worth, and so forth. This legacy of this psychic trauma that still works with people, affects people everywhere in Indian country. And then on the opposite end of the spectrum, you have non-native people. And guess what she found, Penny? That non-native people seem to get a sense of empowerment when they look at that same negative depiction and that mascot.
You know, this is, you know, when you think about it, it's very warped and it's very sad. Here we are in the 21st century, and people just don't have a clue. They don't have a clue. And I believe it's just a sense of just not caring. And also, out of sight, out of mind, because many of the television programs that you see do not have Native people at all playing any role in them. I mean, there was a soap opera where there was a Native, forget the actor's name, and there have been some, but not often enough. Specials on PBS and on HBO, but not enough.
Yes, absolutely. And speaking of out of sight, out of mind, you know, when we look at the origins of indigenous themed mascots, you know, we got to go back to the early 20th century when the mainstream media began to refer to Native Americans as, quote, the vanishing Americans, the vanishing Americans, close quote. And with the Indian population having reached approximately 237,000, that's right, 237,000 and still dropping, it certainly is understandable that the perception of you or Americans was that Native Americans were headed towards extinction. It was during this time when a majority of indigenous-themed team names were selected. And, you know, the history will show that the first use of indigenous-based mascots goes back to the University of Wisconsin in 1909, when that institution first named its teams Indian. And then many other universities followed suit in the 1920s, the 30s, and the 40s. And the naming phenomenon was next taken up by thousands of high schools and junior high schools. And, you know, it wasn't until quite recent times when the University of Oklahoma eliminated its mascot called Little Red, a student that was wearing an Indian war bonnet, buckskin costume, and moccasins. That happened around the 1970s that many other universities followed suit, and they began to abandon their offensive American Indian mascots in favor of other names. And then, of course, in 2005, too long ago, folks, the policy was adopted by the NCAA, which led to the continuation of the removal of all these offensive mascots. We're not talking about long ago and far away. We're talking about something that is still deeply embedded in the American psyche, where people think it's okay you know, they think in a warped sort of a backward way that some folks I've heard say that we're honoring you, like the football team and the professional football team, and they use the R word. And they say, get over it, folks. I mean, we like you. We respect you. We honor you. And that's why we use that name. I know that's something that causes you a great deal of consternation, Penny, and I know as it does me and many people.
Well, yeah, because a lot of people, you coming from the West Indies and having Caribou, so many times people say, oh, I thought all this Carib Indians died. That's the same thing that they have said about Wampanoags and Narragansetts and Pequots and on and on and on throughout New England and New York. A lot of people still feel that there are no Native people left in that particular area, especially if they come from, you know, the Midwest or the Northwest, et cetera. And you have some people who actually come from the New England area who just never had any exposure to Native people there.
Yeah,
maybe,
well, you
know, never paid attention to it. And, you know, they just kind of bought into the history that we have all vanished.
Yeah, speaking of history, we should just take a little history, huh, Penny? And look at this whole thing with Geronimo, and what is that really all about? You know, the real Geronimo was born in 1829 in what is now modern-day New Mexico, and as one of the Apache leaders, he inherited a tradition of resisting colonization by both Spaniards and North America. And according to Ron Jackson, writing in the Oklahoma newspaper in 2009, Geronimo's legend is rooted in real deeds of bravery and bloodshed, close quote. So, you know, he eluded capture, and he gained notoriety for his fearless raids against Mexican soldiers. Mexican troops had killed members of his family after storming his village, and his revenge was to kill as many of them as possible. And according to Mr. Jackson, quote, by 1872, the U.S. government officials were keenly aware of Geronimo's fighting exploits when they corralled him and hundreds of his fellow Apache people onto an Arizona Territory reservation. And I continue from that article. 4 years later, Geronimo had a large band of Apache dissidents off the reservation and into the Sierra Madre Mountains of Old Mexico, where they staged raids on anyone unlucky enough to cross their paths. Military officials soon branded Geronimo a renegade. During the next decade, Geronimo repeatedly returned to reservation life in peace, only to bolt with others for the refuge of the Sierra Madres. They often left a trail of blood. Hidden in the mired mountain passes and caves, Geronimo and his followers embarrassed military officials by looting them time and again, and at one point with as many as 5,000 U.S. soldiers on his heels. And it turns out it was an Apache scout that helped track Geronimo down in 1886. As a prisoner of war, he became a celebrity, dictating his memoirs and taking part in President Theodore Roosevelt's inaugural parade in 1905. He died of pneumonia at Fort Sill in Oklahoma in 1909 after falling from his horse. Yeah, so that's a little taste of you know, this Native American's legendary bravery, and so now we go to how did this Geronimo code name come to be and to be used? Well, according to reports, in 1940, soldiers from the parachute division were preparing to test a daring maneuver in which men jump from a plane in rapid succession. The night before the jump, a small group of soldiers left the base to watch a film at the local cinema, a Western featuring the fearless, you got it, Geronimo. Western movies, here we come, the Wild Wild West. As the men later got together, they were quite apprehensive about the next day's jump. And then there was a Private Aubrey Eberhardt announced that he was going to shout, Geronimo, as he leapt from the plane to demonstrate his courage. And the story goes on, Penny, that as he jumped, Geronimo was clearly heard from the ground. So he must have really been speaking out. Geronimo, Lord knows he was in a lot of fear, trying to latch on to a little taste of bravery. And this motivational yell was adopted by other servicemen and quickly became a standard practice for U.S. Army paratroopers and the favored cry of little boys performing a daring leap. Yeah, so there you have it.
And it's also, to this day, children use that term. They'll use Geronimo's name. So. I have been talking to some little ones.
Well, you know, when I grew up in parts of Washington, D.C., we're in a sort of, I guess, an area that would be considered rural now. I mean, that used to all the time. And yeah. I was right there with it. I mean, I didn't know what they're talking about, you know. People yelling, all my little friends yelling, Geronimo!
Yeah.
You know, and you just kind of pick it up and say, hey, that sounds cool, Geronimo. You know?
Yeah.
So
that's how it happens.
That's how it happens. So I'm going to ask you this, Penny. What's the beef here? What's the beef? I mean, what are we so concerned about here? Why are we concerned about the use of Geronimo? I mean, when you're talking about Osama bin Laden, assassination, killing, the premeditated killing, and the hunt for this number one terrorist, and you say, we're going to code name this Geronimo. I mean, what's the beef here?
Well, you're using someone's name, someone who had a strong history and made an impact on this country, someone who protected and, you know, worked hard to keep his people from this continuation of being persecuted during that particular time. So to have his name used in such a derogatory way, you're talking about an assignment to kill another person. It's to me, it's a desecration of a person's name. And when you look at how so many people don't understand this history, it continues terrible myth. It's a myth.
Yes. Well, Penny.
I didn't realize I was talking over you.
Oh, no, go right ahead. Please, talk over me.
No, and for young children to grow up and still have to relearn history and these days and times, it's just, you see how things will continue on?
Well, you know, they say that bin Laden, Osama bin Laden, and Geronimo both evaded the U.S. government for nearly a decade, but you know, we native people feel that the similarities end there. really, because, you know, Geronimo, a Chiricahua Apache, became a hero to Native Americans in the 1800s as a symbol for anti-colonialism. And as we said, he battled Mexican and American troops for nearly 30 years, protesting the relocation of Native peoples to reservation. And he avoided capture during a decade-long manhunt. I'm saying 10 years, 5,000 soldiers at points used to try to corral this man and to capture him. And, you know, he and his followers refused to accept American sovereignty over the West. And he finally surrendered in 1886 and remained a prisoner of war until 1909. And, you know, there was a general, Nelson A. Miles, who pursued Geronimo and eventually accepted his surrender. And here's a quote from General Nelson A. Miles, quote, "He," talking about Geronimo, "he is one of the brightest, most resolute, determined-looking men that I have ever encountered." And, you know, it's as we say, Geronimo was a man noted for bravery, a man that refused to accept injustice and resisted until he had the last breath in him. He resisted, and he refused to lie down and accept this this injustice that was happening to Native people during that time. And there was a lot of history going on during that time, Penny. Forced marches happened in that time period. Let me just see. There was in 1879, you remember, we're talking here 1879, the first students, a group of 84 Lakota children, arrived at the newly established United States Indian Training and Industrial School at Carlisle, Pennsylvania, a boarding school founded by former Indian fighter Captain Richard Henry Pratt, to remove young Indians from their native culture and refashion them as members of mainstream American society. And, Penny, over the next two decades, 24 more schools on the Carlisle model would be established outside the reservation, along with 81 boarding schools and nearly 150 day schools on the Indians' own land. And, you know, you remember Chief Joseph on January 14th?
Oh, I remember him well.
Yes, Nez Perce Trumbull addressed Congress about tribal land stolen through treaties. He gave the analogy that it was like having horses that he doesn't want to sell being sold by his neighbor. He doesn't want to sell his horses, but his neighbor sells them, with the neighbor then letting the buyer take the horses. Anyhow, you know, it's a lot of things that happened during this time, including in 1880, you had the Civilization Regulations. The Civilization Regulations. And those were, Congress had set up a series of offenses that only Indians could commit. These regulations outlawed Indian religions, the practices of, quote, so-called, close quote, medicine men, ceremonies like the sun dance, and leaving the reservation without permission. And, Penny, that was 1880. We're talking about regulations were in place until 1936. So when we look at Geronimo, we have to put this in context. What was happening? And what was this warrior and this resistor doing? What kinds of injustices were going on that he was refusing to succumb to and not allowing his people to be subjected to? So,
well, Go on.
You can take this history and I think there's a saying, and I hope I get it right, until lions have historians, history will always be told in favor of the hunter. And then there's another infamous quote from Napoleon that says, history is a lie agreed upon. So until we tell our own story, which we're doing now, and until we realize that this whole history that we've been fed in this American education system is one big lie, it's one big guilt trip, one denial of facts and truth, then we can take a person, a respected warrior who fought for his freedom until his last, who refused to allow his people to be slaughtered with demonic genocidal practices, and we can turn him around and make him into a bloodthirsty savage, and then equate him to the number one terrorist in the world in 2011 and say, we've just ID'd Geronimo. Well, wait a minute. I thought Geronimo was dead in 1909. So how come you just ID'd Geronimo? And how come you just killed the enemy in action? I mean, this is serious, folks. This is not just...
No, it is serious. But this is the mentality, and this is what, I guess, lies in the hearts and minds of some people. Not everybody, but it still gets back to the fact that unless parents find a way to teach a lot of this history in their home, you're not going to get, a full spectrum in the classroom unless one has a deep interest. And it's unfortunate. Yes, there have been changes in the curriculum over the years. However, there was in 1992, around that time, around the Clemson Centennial, Columbus, remembering Columbus and rethinking Columbus in terms of how this history is taught in the schools. A lot of great curricula came out of that time period. People spent a lot of time and energy really looking at this history as a whole and implementing different ways to teach Native American history. And we're talking from Alaska all the way down to the tip of South America and all the islands, to look at this history from a different lens. So there a lot of effort has been put into this. So it's not like it's not out there. It's just that people, schools, educators have to, find a way to initiate this and to delve a little deeper into it.
Well,
been speaking to our grandchildren, things that they're not learning in school in terms of Native American history, of course, they're learning from, their parents and from us, but what they're learning in school, I mean, look how we have to help them out with some of the things that they've learned, even with all this new way of dealing with this history. It's still not quite there.
Well, let me ask you, what school did George W. Bush go to? That's what I want to know. So I hear what you're saying. No, hold it, Penny. I hear what you're saying. I hear you loud and clear. I agree with you. Something has to be done, but what are you going to do to dismantle this institutionalized racism that exists alive and well, thick and high here in the United States? But let's go back to equating Geronimo to Osama bin Laden. Talking about history, you got to get your facts straight, talking to me and talking to all of our listeners in the chat room and otherwise, and any of you that are listening, and I know there are a few, you can call 646 area code 716-4294, 646-4294. 716-4294. We will gladly take your call and be in dialogue with you on this, because we know there are many opinions. That any opinion is no better than yours. It's just our opinion. That doesn't make it the truth, which is all relative, but it's certainly, we're trying to stick with the facts. And speaking of the facts, it was back in 2001 that this narrative for America's hunt for the Al-Qaeda leader became strewn with Wild West imagery. George W. Bush's call for bin Laden to be caught, quote, dead or alive, close quote, mimicked the posters of the old Hollywood Westerns. And the borderland Pakistan became the old West, reincarnated in the minds of many commentators. And bin Laden was referred to by one of those commentators as, quote, a 21st century Geronimo trying to elude the U.S. military somewhere in a dry mountain range that could easily pass for the American West, close quote. So now, there you have it. You know, you have George Bush, dead or alive, and a commentator coming right in on his heels saying, you got it, President. Prez Bush, you got it, man. 21st century Geronimo trying to elude the military just like in the good old days. And, you know, we look at this and go further, you know, referring to U.S. military possibilities in the tribal areas of Afghanistan's mountainous regions. Alan R. Millett, a retired Marine Corps colonel and Ohio State University professor. Penny, did you say education? I'm saying, yes, let's talk about education and being educated in this American system of institutionalized racism. Alan R. Millett, a retired Marine Corps colonel and Ohio State University professor, said in 2001, quote, it's like shooting missiles at Geronimo. You might get a couple of Apaches, but what difference does that make? Close quote. So, you know, those are some pretty stark, cold-blooded statements. And it's not like we're making this up. This is not you know, fantasy land. This is your worst reality show for Native Americans, when you have professors and generals equating Afghanistan's cave-laced mountains to the Sierra Madre mountain thousands of miles away, where the original Geronimo managed to elude U.S. troops so long ago in the 19th century. And then we fast forward and they're looking at Afghanistan and saying, hey, you know, it's like shooting missiles at Geronimo. What difference does it make if we kill a few Apaches? And Penny, I tell you,
it falls off the tongues very easily with a lot of people, because it's just something that people think of, and this is what happens.
This is what happens, and like Geronimo, who is going to stand and resist? Who will stand up to the system and tell them, heck no, we ain't going to take it. You're not going to do this. Who is going to hold people accountable? Starting with our good president, Barack Obama. I mean, what should we be demanding here in terms of the use of this name? I mean, is an apology good enough? Even consider an apology as a start to say, I'm sorry that we codenamed this thing, you know, Geronimo. I mean, hours after the codename was reported, there were reports from the White House that the officials tried to revise the story, saying that Geronimo was a general name for the operation. You know, it's Operation Geronimo, and we weren't really talking about bin Laden himself. I mean, I guess somehow cleans it up to say, no. See, you misunderstood. You took it out of context. See, when we said enemy killed in action, we've ID'd Geronimo, we were talking about the operation. We weren't actually equating Geronimo to Osama bin Laden. You know,
well, I guess, you know, this is always the cleanup, but I have to go back to 2008, May the 19th, 2008, when President, then Senator Barack Obama, was campaigning. He went to the Crow Agency in Montana, and there he became the first presidential candidate to visit the reservation of the Crow Nation. And he was adopted into a family there. And he was given the name Barack Black Eagle. Now, one would think that our president would be slightly more sensitive to matters like this. Now, maybe he didn't have, you know, any say in the matter, or things happen so fast that, you know, it comes out Operation Geronimo and you know, there's nothing he can really do at the time. But it's time for him to make some kind of a statement.
Penny, I don't know if you heard me, and I'm sure you did. I'm not trying to be flippant here. But as I said, it didn't happen so fast. It happened a long time ago. This has been going on forever. And, you know, what I was talking about here was as early as 2001, President Bush, George W.,
that's true,
was mm-hmm. talking about capturing dead or alive and off reservation. All these terms are commonly used. It's just that in today's society, it's not going to be tolerated. So thank God that the Native brothers and sisters stood up and said, wait a minute. And you know who those Native brothers and sisters were, Penny, that stood up and said, wait a minute? We have the highest rate of living veterans of any community in the country. Now, I want you to hear me out now. 22% of the Native population, or 190,000 people, 190,000 living veterans in Indian country today, Penny, and they have they were all offended by the use of Geronimo's name to use it in reference to the assault on bin Laden and the death of bin Laden. So we've got to look at the fact that not only near extermination, the vanishing Americans, not too long ago, but we went from the vanishing Americans to the Americans to have the highest rate of living veterans who have served their country. Now, you go figure that one out.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, it's tough. So not for one minute do I excuse this as some mental lapse. I believe, my opinion, not very good. Don't have to like it, but I believe seated institutionalized racism. You know, it's like when people say, you can get more bang for your buck when you do X, Y, and Z. Do they really know what they're talking about when they say bang for your buck? What is the reference bang for your buck? Where does that come from? People say things sometimes unwittingly, you know, unintentionally, out of ignorance, just don't know. But today, we have an ability to know. You got to know better, especially when this issue is something that keeps coming up. There have been many apologies lately, Penny, by the United States governments, by the Canadian government. People apologizing all the time for the atrocities that were committed on us Native people in the Caribbean, around the world, from you know, Trinidad and Tobago all the way to Oklahoma and across to the west of the Mississippi, and Central and South America. So, you know, I think that we need to take a real close look at what's going on here. And, you know, let's talk about something else. This nomenclature, Native nomenclature, it's all over the military, Penny. It's not as they slipped up and said, Geronimo.
Black Hawk helicopters. Apache helicopters. There's so many. Names used.
Let's not forget the Tomahawk missiles.
Right.
And the term used when you leave a military base on a foreign country. You're on a military base. You're the United States 5th Fleet in Bahrain. And when you stuff the base, you know what they say, don't you?
You're off the reservation.
You're going off the reservation into Indian country. That is a typical common a statement by military personnel today. You're going off the reservation. So, you know, let's talk about other leaders, and I want to know where these guys got educated. We were Stud Muffin, right?
You know, boy.
Stud Muffin, Donald Rumsfeld. Yeah, Donald Rumsfeld, who was dearly loved by his own military people at the Pentagon. Well, Rumsfeld, when he went to Fort Carson, named after the infamous Kit Carson, who was responsible for the deaths of thousands of Navajo people in the nation, urged people in speaking to the troops that in the global war on terror, U.S. forces from this base have lived up to the legend of Kit Carson fighting terrorists in the mountains of Afghanistan to help secure victory. That's what he said. And every one of you is like Kit Carson. Donald Rumsfeld, glorifying an Indian. Now, I mean, maybe Kit Carson, in the view of Native people, is a terrorist. But he's celebrated. Just like that hearing, the Senate hearing, where people look at Native mascots and the caricatures, and Native people feel belittled, berated, loss of identity, low self-esteem, and non-Native people look at that and feel empowered. I mean, that's not us making that up. That's a well-heeled study that was conducted, reported before the Senate of the United States.
Well, I tell you, Thunder, we have a lot of work to do, and it's going to happen. We are going to get the message out, and the voices of Indigenous peoples are rising, and that's a good thing. And the more voices that are heard in different media, the better things will be for all people. Because we always like to say, we are beyond the crossroads. And the Indigenous voices, the wisdom keepers, the keepers of the stories, all of these voices are starting to come out, and people are starting to hear things that they've never heard before. So that's
one
what I'm saying right now.
Well, let me tell you something, Penny. One of these things, I'm glad to hear that, and I'm standing. But you got your back, sister, so here we go. One of the things that we will cover, for those who are listening to us in the chat room, thank you for joining us. Those of you on the telephone, thank you for joining us. Don't forget, don't be shy. Call in 646-716-4294. Let us know what you're thinking. What do you think? Are we out here? Are we taking this thing over the top, a little too soon? I don't know. But one of the things I want to say to those who are joining us tonight and today and those who will be listening to the archive program, we in future programs soon to come hope to look at the military domination of Indian country, because that's what we're really talking about here, just the Indian, the military domination of Indian country. 17 reservations named after forts, and one of them is Fort Sill, S-I-L-L, in Oklahoma. And Fort Sill, of course, is where the Apaches themselves were incarcerated for 27 years, and their crime, being Apache. That's what their crime was, being Apache. You're locked down for 27 years. I mean, let's draw some parallels here. I mean, where else have we seen that today? We like to always think about, oh, I'm not taking responsibility for that. I don't have to account for that. I don't have to account for the wealth that I got from a stolen land and using stolen people to farm and develop this stolen land. I just have this wealth, and you know, and gosh, you know, whatever I can do to help you people, I'll try my best. You know, it's too bad what happened to you, but it's beyond too bad. Where do we see that today, where people are locked down? Terrorists are locked up with no charges, no charges. Even within the military, people are saying this is not right to just lock people up without a trial of any kind, no civil trial in an American court of law, no military trial, I mean absolutely nothing. Just keep people locked up. And our good president, Barack Obama, facing this issue. He came in saying that he would figure out a way to bring justice to those prisoners one way or another. Guantanamo, Fort Sill. See any parallels there? I mean, Penny, you know, when we study history, the near extinction and of the Native American, our brothers and sisters, and the African. And when we see the religious persecution that happened among Europeans themselves who came here for religious freedom, I mean, we need to look at these cycles and these patterns. And now when we take what happened in the good old West and we overlay that in the Middle East, I mean, hello, folks, holla if you see any parallels there, if you see any correlation. When we say, is it okay to have targeted assassinations, the policy of the United States government being openly discussed, is the strategic path that we are now coming to, because we're just about flat broke fiscally, running out of money, the dollar's worth nothing, just printing money out of thin air. We're going to withdraw troops from Afghanistan and the Middle East, and instead of an assault on Al-Qaeda, the terrorist, we are going to adopt a policy of targeted assassinations, like Gaddafi, like bin Laden. I mean, if we don't like you, we'll just take you out. And like they said on the Economic Hitman, if we can't buy you out, then we'll take you out. I mean, so I don't want to go too far down the road with that, Penny, but I'm saying that people today cannot sidestep responsibility. There's a reason why we need to come together. There's a reason why America needs to face this sordid history and come clean with it, heal together. So we can stop doing inhumane things in the name of democracy, because this is no different than what was done to our American Indian brothers and sisters, our people, our ancestors, in the name of manifest destiny. They wiped us out. They wiped out my people, the Carib Indian. They just annihilated us in the name of the blessing of the church, in the name of God and religion. I hereby declare that And so today, in the name of religion and in the name of democracy, we prop up the rationalizations to go over and continue to invade other people's sovereignty, the same way the sovereignty of Native people was invaded. When we wrote the Constitution of the United States, we had one little problem that we never could figure out, Penny, and that was what to do with all the sovereign Native nations within our midst. They never, ever figured that out.
That's what the American government has always been grappling with. And, you know, Thunder, I just have to say this. There's so many parallels, and there are so many issues that are out here right now. It makes one's head spin. But if you really dissect all of these different things, it follows a pattern. And this is why we all have to pay attention to what's going on. We have to really pay attention to what happened on May 1st, because it's going to shed light on, it's shedding light on so many other, I guess, I'm going to just straight out and say lies that have been told to us about things that are going on. And now I think we're beginning to see a different picture, because putting the pieces together, connecting the dots with the information that you gave earlier about things that happened to the Apache, to the different acts that were initiated by this government to remove children from their families and send them to Carlisle, Pennsylvania. All of these things that happened, suppressing religious freedom, saying outright that you can no longer practice your ways, you have to do it this way and conform to these, to Christianity, et cetera, because your ways are evil and savage, et cetera. I mean, we really have to pay attention to what happened, so we can understand what is going on right now.
Yes, and they like to talk about the fact that because there is a, quote, black president in the White House. Oh, that's a nice picture.
You're breaking up a little bit here.
Okay, well, I don't know if you can hear me any better now.
Yes, I can.
Yeah, you know, they're talking about the fact that there is a black president in the White House. And now this is post-racial America. We're just going to put a and make racism go away. Well, I wish it was that easy. Boy, I prayed that it was going to be that way. Against Native Americans and many people is still going on. And, you know, you just have to look at the facts, folks, not stuff we're making up. The U.S. Justice Department, by its own admission, crimes against Native Americans have increased and they're going unpunished. And that's today. And, you know, when we look at this, Penny, and I'm not going to dwell on this except to just sort of bring to a close on some factual points. Hundreds of Native people made up millions of individuals and occupied these lands that would become the United States of America. And during the colonial and independent periods, a long series of Indian wars were fought with the primary objective of obtaining much of North America as territory of the United States. And through wars, massacres, forced displacement, such as the Trails, not just one, but many, restriction of food rights, imposition of treaties, land was taken and numerous hardships imposed, and ideologies justifying the context included the stereotype as, quote, merciless Indian savages, close quote. Want to know where I got that from? Go to the United States Declaration of Independence. and the quasi-religious doctrine of manifest destiny, which asserted divine blessing for U.S. conquest of the seaboard to the Pacific, and the most rapid invasion occurred during Penny the California Gold Rush. And the first 2 years of that California Gold Rush saw the deaths of. And following this 1848 American invasion, Native Californians were enslaved in a new state from statehood in 1850 until 1867. So, you know, when we talk about Geronimo and we talk about military and civil resistance by Native Americans, that has been a constant feature of American history. And I guess, Penny, it depends on which end of the spectrum you're on as to how you view that military and civil resistance. Were we fighting for our rights and our freedom, and were we defending ourselves, or were we bloodthirsty, merciless Indian savages as described in the founding documents of the United States? I guess, you know, these debates will go on around these issues of sovereignty, upholding treaty civil rights of Native Americans under U.S. law, and they should. We should be having some serious reflection, some real conversations about this, and actually, Penny, I view this world incident of the assassination and killing of Osama bin Laden and his equating him to Geronimo as a great opportunity for us to revisit this hidden history, to revisit the big lie, and perhaps have the courage to face the truth.
I totally agree. It's ironic how things happen, and this is the opportunity for us to really carry this conversation beyond where it's going. It's something that needs to be discussed on a regular basis.
Yes, and you know, I'm all for discussion, but I'm a little tired of intellectualizing this stuff. I mean, let's actually shift the paradigm and do the right thing. I don't want an apology from you. I want you to send resources to the Native American reservations. I want you to get people off the reservation. Yeah, when you want to talk about off the reservation, get us off the reservation. I don't mean off literally, like march us off. I mean get us out of the ghetto. Get us off the reservation where we're living today, 2011, in abject poverty. Don't tell me that you don't see that. Don't apologize and try to sidestep the use of the word Geronimo in reference to the killing of the world's biggest terrorist. I don't want to hear it. What I want to hear is that you're going to get some hot water, some running water, some plumbing, some food, some clothing, some resources, so that Native men and women aren't committing suicide at alarming rate and drugging themselves out to try to kill the pain. I don't want to hear that you have lost billions of dollars in royalties. The BIA, it just disappeared. We just took your uranium and it's sitting, you know, the worst is yet to come because, you know, most of Native lands are being taken over by the military. And Native people and their sacred places, like Fort Sill, Medicine Bluff, that's right, they're trying to destroy Medicine Bluff and Fort Sill. If you really want to do something about this, where you enslaved and incarcerated Apaches for 27 years, you can make it right. You can make it right by stop making Alaska a nuclear toxic dumping ground. You can go to North Dakota and stop fracking and spreading cancer to all the Mandan people up there. I mean, you can honor the 22% of living veterans in this country that have served this country in spite of all you have done to us by doing the right thing. But you know, Penny, I'm prayerful, I'm hopeful, I'm ready to resist and take action, but the fact still remains that two-thirds of the uranium in the United States is on indigenous land. Now, you know, if history goes, it's been going, we have a lot yet in front of us, because God knows that it's the one thing capitalism wants is resources that it can take for cheap. And when two-thirds of the uranium is on in the U.S. is on indigenous land, you know we've got a battle yet to fight. But we better get ready and not just have light intellectual discussions about this. This is the time to see.
Yes, and you know, when you think about what has happened in Central and South America, where indigenous peoples have, you know, decided they were going to rise up and they were going to protect the land, and it's cost them many lives. But sometimes I think we have to look at what's going on in those places and take note, because many of the people in parts of Central and South America have been somewhat successful in this. And even though they're still suffering, but they're not going to give up. And this is all about resources. It's about oil. It's about water.
And it's not too late, Penny. I guess my point is, if we actually come together, those who say that I am not part of this institutionalized racism, then I say to you, I will accept your affirmation, but you have to do this. You have to affirmatively opt out of the system of institutionalized racism, and then I invite you to stand in our indigenous circle, to hold hands, and to honor and protect Mother Earth. And there are many, many people who have done that. And I say to those who have not done that, you know, we indigenous people have, and African people have been very forgiving. We have had so many things done to us in boarding schools and otherwise, and we have found the means to forgive. And so we are ready to stand in the circle with those who are willing to affirmatively opt out. And so together, we don't have to put on guilt trips. We need to get over our legacy of psychic. You can get over the guilt trip. Let's just stand together. Let's just come together in peace, in love, and do the right thing as a community to save our humanity and to save Mother Earth. I mean, this can be done. And I have every willing to step up to the plate, so to speak, and do the right thing and advocate for the right thing and not passively sit in the bleachers and be silent, because there's a time when silence is complicity. And this is one of those times. If you don't stand up and say something about this, take this opportunity with us to say, we're not going to point the finger at you and accuse you of genocide. We just want to stand in a circle with you and heal, so we can come together and live in harmony the way we originally intended when you came to these shores and, quote, discovered us. When we opened our arms and said, we welcome you, we will share with you this land of abundance. And unfortunately, the clash of cultures said, no, we don't want to share, we're going to take it. And so we have been in conflict ever since. And so I think that this gives us an opportunity to revisit that history and say, you know, America really does have to look at its history and own up to what it's doing and own up to why the rest of the world lives in fear of the United States. Is that the relationship we want with the globe, where people fear us? I don't think so. That's not the relationship I want. That's not the natural order, Penny. That's not the cycle of life. That's not what the Great Spirit intended for us to be and to do.
Well, this stirs up a lot of emotion, but, you know, to get beyond the emotion, like you said, it's time to stand up, rise up, and take action.
Well, you know, we did not opportunity to speak with our special guest this evening as we had hoped, but that's okay, because I feel like we had a thought-provoking, dynamic discussion of the issue, and I hope that those of you who are listening perhaps feel that there was something to take away from this conversation that would be useful as we move forward to try to shift the paradigm and come together in peace and harmony and love the world and save and protect ourselves and Mother Earth.
Well, you know, I'd like to end the show with the story of the sacred tree.
Yes.
Because I think it ties things together and it will give us things to ponder and think about and then take action on. And the story of the sacred tree. For all the people of the earth, the Creator has planted a sacred tree under which they may gather and there find healing, power, wisdom, and security. The roots of the tree spread deep into the body of Mother Earth. Its branches reach upward like hands praying to Father Sky. The fruits of the tree are the good things the Creator has given to the people, teachings that allow, that show the path to love, compassion, generosity, patience, wisdom, justice, courage, respect, humility, and many other wonderful gifts. The ancient ones taught us that the life of the tree is the life of the people. If the people wander far from the protective shadow of the tree, if they forget to seek the nourishment of its fruit, or if they should turn against the tree and attempt to destroy it, great sorrow will fall upon the people. Many will become sick at heart. The people will lose their power. They will cease to dream dreams and see visions. They will begin to quarrel among themselves over worthless trifles. They will become unable to tell the truth or to deal with each other honestly. They will forget how to survive in their own land. Their lives will become filled with anger and gloom. Little by little, they will poison themselves and all they touch. It was foretold that these things would come to pass, but that the tree would never die. And as long as the tree lives, the people live. It was also foretold that the day would come when the people would awaken, as if from a long drugged sleep, that they would begin timidly at first, but then with great urgency to search again for the sacred tree. The knowledge of this, its whereabouts, and of the fruits that adorn its branches have always been carefully guarded and preserved within the minds and hearts of our wise elders and leaders. These humble, loving, and dedicated souls will guide anyone who is honestly and sincerely seeking along the path leading to the protecting shadow of the sacred tree. Aho.
Aho, Mataqui Olasin. We honor all our relations. That was so deeply and profoundly appropriate, you know, the sacred tree. To have wandered from that root. Yeah, but it's not too late for all of us to reclaim our humanity by going back to that vibration, going back to a very simple formula, which is just living according to the natural order, the universal law. I mean, it's really quite simple. It's not complicated.
And when I said earlier that the holders of this knowledge, the wisdom keepers, the medicine people, and I'm talking not only here on this part of the globe, but I'm talking in Asia and Africa and you know, all over. There are people who hold this knowledge. And when I tell you that this information is coming up, it's bubbling up, and there are a lot of people who are listening and a lot of people who are taking these words to heart, that's what's encouraging to me.
Yes, it is. It is quite encouraging, and we're going to go out on a note of knowing, not hope, not belief, but knowing that it is our time. It is time for us, people who are the carriers of the wisdom, who are the carriers of the word, who are the healers, to come forth and help mend, you know, the healers, the original people, the indigenous people, and the menders. It's time for the healers and the menders to come together and negate the actions of the breakers, those who have done so many dastardly things, Penny. And I think, Penny, it's good that I feel good that we've had this conversation and this dialogue this evening, and I hope those of you who are listening, you know, take something from it, as we said. And I thought that, Penny, I could give you a choice here in terms of our going out music, a choice prophecy walk, or All My Relations?
I want to hear Pearl K's All My Relations again, because there again, it just speaks to all that we've talked about, and it says so much about where we are right now and where we need to go. So,
and
thank
Pearl
you all.
Pura Fe has started a wonderful movement, talking about putting words into action and vision. She has called together from across the country to come together in prayer and in song, and all over the United States on Turtle Island, women are taking up the call and coming together in their local communities and singing the traditional songs and coming together to help heal Mother Earth and heal ourselves.
Bringing back the traditions, working together, because the women, we do hold a lot of power and energy as nurturing, life-giving, two-legged. We have to do this, and this is the time. So for the wonderful sisters down there, Melinda Lowry and Kay Oxendine and Perfe Bassioni and Gabrielle Tayak in Maryland and all up and down the coast and all around, women are coming together, and it's beautiful. And so we can play All Our Relations.
All My Relations, yes, by Perfe. Thank you so much. We hope to see you again next Wednesday here on Talking Feather Radio.
Until we meet again.
Tabatni, thank you. Aquani, peace.
nation, to our elders who teach us of our creation and our past, so we may preserve this earth woman mother for ancestors yet to come. We are the land. This is dedicated to our relatives thousands of years ago and to the 150 million who were exterminated across the Western Hemisphere in the first 400 years' time, starting in 1492. To those who held on to their homeland and to those that are extinct due to mass slaughter, slavery, deportation, and disease unknown to them, and to the ones who are subjected to the same treatment today, to the ones who survived the relocation and the ones who died along the way, to those that carried on traditions and lived strong among their people, to those who left their communities by force or by choice, and through generations no longer know who they are, to those who search and never find, to those who turn away the so-called non-acceptance, to those that bring us together, and those living outside, keeping touch, the voice for many. To those that make it back to live and fight the struggles of their people, to those that give up, and those who do not care, to those who abuse themselves and others, and those who revive again, to those who are mentally, physically, or spiritually incapable by accident or by birth, to those who seek strength in our spirituality and ways of life, and those who exploit it, even ourselves, our own, to those who fall for the lies and join the dividing lines that keep us fighting amongst each other, to the outsiders that step in, good or bad, and those of us that we don't know better, to the leaders and prisoners of war, politics, crime, race, and religion, innocent or guilty, to the young, the old, the living, and the dead, to our brothers and sisters and all living things across this earth woman and her beauty, we've destroyed, and we've denied the honor that creation has given each individual, the truth that is in our hearts.